Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 67 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast. And I'm your host, Big T. This is your episode for Wednesday, June 21st, 2017, and I gotta tell you, I'm truly honored to be sitting here tonight with all of you and to introduce my next guest for the show. I can't tell you how honored I am right now. This man worked in WCW for many years, and he was around during the big Monday Night Wars when all that stuff was going on, and we have none other than a WCW legend, the innovator of the selfie, Mr. Sonny Ono. How you doing tonight, Sonny?
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's a beautiful day, and I'm having a great evening talking to you.
And I'm having a great evening talking to you as well. I'm so happy that you accepted the invitation to come on the show. Thank you very much again.
Oh, my pleasure. I just got back from Lucha Pride Pro Wrestling Show Mineola, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas. And, a lot of former WWE and WCW stars on the card. And it's fun to get back and see all those guys. Rodney Mack was there and Lord Humongous, that's the main event. And Jazz from WWE was there. I mean, it's pretty good stuff.
Oh, that sounds incredible. Just to go back and hang out with everybody and catch up on old times, that had to be awesome.
Yeah, right now, I think it's, although wrestling as a business per se is obviously it's nothing like the way it was back in, late 90s and early 2000, but, it's really great for fans because there's so many talent out there that it's not on WWE contract, and even TNA guys can work a lot of independent shows. So, it's a way for you to go out and see some of the big superstar that you see on television or you've seen in television to be able to go to these independent shows and actually be able to shake their hands and get a photograph with them and stuff like that. So I think as a fan goes, I would really recommend them to go to a lot of independent shows, see who's on the card, on your local card. Tickets are a lot cheaper. You get to actually, feel the sweat flying off the guys, I think it's a good time, great time for fans right now.
Oh, definitely. I'll tell you, the independent wrestling scene is, absolutely incredible. I agree with you 100% because, I've pretty much done it all when it's come to wrestling as far as, go around and see the shows. I've been to 7 WrestleManias. I've been to, TNA shows. And I gotta tell you, that independent, the indies, the independent wrestling, it's a very up close and personal, intimate setting where you really get to talk with the superstars, and get to interact with them. It's really an experience like no other. And for like you said, the tickets are not expensive at all.
No, it should be to have, heck out of going to a movie. You know what I mean? Because it's a live show. You get to see some of the amazing talent that you get to see, some of the guys are something you can talk about years from now, and you can say, hey, I took my kid to see so-and-so, on local venue and be able to talk about that. Because, before WCW and before WWE, when it was WWF, back in the days, probably before your time, but, when there was the territories, that's what it was. They would come around once, twice a year to your town and put on a heck of a show. Up here in Minnesota, it was AWA, it was Vern Gagne and Masa Saito and Crusher those are the guys, fuck Zumoff, and you know, it was they were bigger than life guys that came to your town and tore it up, you know. So right now, I think there's opportunity for a lot of fans, wrestling fans, to go out there and catch some of the, you know, a great talent at some of the independent shows. But anyway, enough of promotion. There is one group that I'm really loving it. It's called the Hoot Slam. Those guys are out of Oakland. They do show once a month or once or twice a month, but they put up some very unique talent. It's a little bit risque and probably adult-oriented. Kids are not allowed in the place, but it's a lot of fun. They push the envelope a little bit. But like I said, there's a lot of stuff out there that you can pick and choose what you like.
Oh, definitely. And I got to tell you, I'm one of those fans, like, I pretty much love all wrestling. But I got to say, I'm still in that mindset, you know, back in the day when you were at WCW, you know, having the Monday Night Wars, I'm still kind of in that era of pushing the envelope. You know, that's one thing that, that I just loved about pro wrestling was that edginess, you know?
Yeah. Well, you turned in because you didn't know what was going to happen.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah, so it wasn't, you know, like the current stuff that it's on there now, I think kind of suspense is gone, you know. But you know, I mean, they're trying and they're doing the best they can. It's easy to sit outside and watch and critique the show, but it is a hard business, you know, for the talent, for the wrestlers and everybody that works in the business. You know, you're away from home long time, many days, and it's a tough life. But, you know, they do it for the sake of entertainment. And I will say, and I will probably tell you, 95% of the people in the business loves what they're doing. So, you know, that's a fact. So, you know, kudos to those guys who continue to do that. But, you know, when there was a Monday Night War was going on, you know, it was a great time because there was a competition, two big company going head to head, you know, trying to outdo each other, as far as what they were producing for the fans. But it was a great, one of the best times for the talent because talent can leverage themselves and, you know, get the best payday they could. And one of the things that Eric Bischoff did, to order to compete at beginning, you know, a lot of people don't know it, but, you know, he was, back in the days, you know, their pay scale was, it wasn't guaranteed. You know, they would get a percentage of the gate depending on who you were in the lineup. So, you know, if you were a headliner, main event, you got so many percent. And if you were the guy who was opening the show, you got a lot less. But that's, you know, that's why you want to get yourself over and work your way towards the main event. You can get paid more. But, you know, what Eric Bischoff did is it changed that to you were television talent. You're on TV, you got guaranteed money, you got paycheck every 2 weeks. You know, that changed the business. And not only that, you know, for the first time and many of the wrestlers' lives, they can count on that they had a guaranteed contract, whether it was a year or two or multi-year. You know, they can count on that. You know, they can go and buy a house. You know, you know, a bank would really look at you seriously. You know, so I think it was the best time for the talent. It was the best time for the business because, you know, company was making money, and it was the best time for the fans.
You know what, Sonny, back in the day, you're 100% right. It was best for the fans because, you know, you had that variety. And WCW, now I always say this, and I'm curious if you will agree with me on this, because I always say this to people when I talk wrestling, and you were around during this Monday Night Wars time. And I just wonder, like, you know, now WWE, how, you know, it's no mystery, you know, that the business has changed, like you said, and, you know, things are a little tougher now. And, but back in the day, you know, WWE, like now they, it seems like they're complacent. They just stay, you know, doing what they're doing, and they really don't change stuff up. But when you guys in WCW were around, it's like you guys really pushed WWE's back up against the wall and really got to challenge them. And, it was just tit for tat in the ratings war. I mean, I remember when you guys were going back and forth one time, and there was one time you guys were up for, I believe, 84 weeks straight. And,
yeah, we beat them, 84 weeks in a row. And you have to understand, you know, I mean, I was not involved in programming or booking, but when you tuned into WCW, I think one of the things we did best was that we gave them variety. In other words, yes, we had a beginning show where, you know, the big stars, the major stars like Hulk Hogan and Sting and Ric Flair, you know, Lex Luger, those guys, you know, would start the show with a bang and tell you that, and set, you know, let the audience know what the storyline from what last week was and where he was going, you know. The main event of the night will be, and so on. And then, but, you know, as the match went on, it was no, you know, there wasn't a lot of talk. There was a lot of wrestling. If you remember, many of the second hour, beginning of the second hour, we always started with like, you know, Ultimate Dragon versus Rey Mysterio. Well, let me tell you something. You don't need any storyline with that. If you're a wrestling fan, you know you're going to get phenomenal action in the ring when Ultimo Dragon wrestles Rey Mysterio. Or Eddie Guerrero versus, Dean Malenko. You know you're going to get amazing wrestling match. So, you know, I think we gave them variety, and of course we had, you know, I was fortunate enough to manage people like Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto, who ended up being the last WCW Women's Champion, you know, going head to head with, Medusa. So I think we gave, that's one of the things that WCW did back then, was we gave them variety of the matches and not much dull moments.
Oh, definitely. Like, you guys, you kept the entertainment factor, you know, at an all-time high. You brought it to the TV screens every week. I know I was entertained, and it was just a fantastic time. But before we talk more about WCW, because I know we'll talk more about it a little bit later, one place I would like to start off with you, Sonny, for fans to know more about you is, you know, approximately, how old would you say you were when you first discovered pro wrestling, and what was one thing that made you fall in love with the business that made you say to yourself, you know what? I gotta be a part of this. I gotta be in the pro wrestling business in some way. What inspired you?
Well, actually, that's not how it happened for me. How it happened for me is that, Eric Bischoff and myself, we travel in our 20s. We're in our 20s. We travel to what is known as the karate circuit, which is, you get to, you know, back then I was teaching, karate, and one of the things you want to do is you want to test your skills. So we would go to a tournament, and Eric lived about 100 miles away from me, and he worked for karate school. So on the weekend, you know, we would drive to Atlanta, we would drive to North Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, you know, Texas, Kansas City, So we would drive, spend all money, and pay $25. And our thing was to test our skill in fighting. Frankly, it was the best part was that, you know, we knew we could pay $25 and beat people up and then end up in jail. So that was the best part. So Eric and I was, you know, were teammates. He was in a different weight class, so we never fought each other. So, you know, we would travel together and do that. So we were friends, and we'd done some business together. And what happened was, if you get the Eric Bischoff's DVD, just came out about 6 months ago, we talk about and how Eric Bischoff got in business, because I have created this game called Ninja Star Wars, which was kind of low-tech laser tag, was throwing the ninja stars, the Velcro ninja stars, at each other. And Eric loved the idea and took the game to AWA because they would have a national airtime. And he made a deal so we could advertise our stuff, the game on wrestling show. And believe it or not, that's how Eric Bischoff got introduced to wrestling. And next thing you knew, he was announcing, he was selling actual programs, syndicated shows. Then he ended up being an announcer. And next thing you knew, he was being hired by WCW in Atlanta, Georgia. And kind of rest is history. How I got in the business was he called me one day and says, "Hey, I'm trying to repair some business in Japan. So, why don't you come with me?" And we flew to Japan together you know, I met with guys like Masa Saito, Sagaguchi, Choshu, you know, and these guys looked like they wanted to kill us. You know, I jumped in with both feet because I was translating what Eric was saying. Turns out the prior management of WCW has taken like $500,000 on a talent deal and never produced the talent. So we had to fix that. That was my first basically a job that I had. And next thing I knew, they said that, who's going to be a contact person at WCW? And Eric said, "Is that a skip and a beat?" He said, "Oh, that'll be Sunny." and that's how I got into business. And actually I was kind of, that's how I became a liaison between two companies. And, when they started, you know, sending the talent over, to WCW on the talent exchange program, none of them spoke English, so they needed a English speaking Japanese mouthpiece. And that's how I became on-camera talent as Sonny Ono, the manager of, you know, all the Japanese wrestlers. And later on, of course, I managed, you know, the Luchadors and Psychosis, La Parka, Silver King, Damien, all those guys, along with, you know, of course, in my later years, you know, I was managing, Ernest Miller, you know, so, which was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, it was a great time. But that's how I got in business.
It's a very awesome story, you know, just getting to hear a bit, you know, about you and Eric Bischoff and your travels and, you know, hearing about your managerial career. And now I wanted to ask you, who was your favorite guy to work with, to manage when you were there?
Well, you know, one of the probably, as far as being a mouthpiece manager, you know, when I managed Yuji Nagata, who still works with the New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, I had to pick one person. In earlier days, he would probably be Ultimo Dragon. The man is phenomenal. He still wrestles today. You know, after 20 years since then, he's still wrestling. You know, he hasn't lost a touch. Of course, fun time, you know, when I was managing Ernest the Cat Miller, you know, he didn't need a mouthpiece. I was kind of like a sidekick. You know, I was the reason why he lost the match. you know, so it was kind of like a Rush Hour thing.
And I love that movie. I love Rush Hour. But yeah, you know, those sound like some fun times. And I guess the next direction that I want to move into, Sonny, is well, before I get more into about WCW, how I hear that you're the innovator of the selfie. Can you tell us how that all came about and what happened there?
I mean, it was interesting enough. The, you know, I was playing a character, obviously, and one of the things that Japanese tourists were always known as carrying a camera, taking pictures. And that was kind of like a stereotype Japanese tourist. So, I wanted, you know, I said, I'm taking the camera, and let's not, you know, nobody's taking our picture. We'll just take our own picture. So I started doing that with a Fuji Instamatic 35mm camera, one of those cardboard box throwaway cameras. And I started, you know, snapping myself every time I made interest. And you know, that was before what's called a selfie, you know. And one of the most interesting things, at one point, Fuji Film, actually offered us to sponsor a pay-per-view because of my selfie deal. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens on television, you know, and I was doing that, taking a picture of myself and my wrestler, you know, before it was called selfie and before anybody else was doing it on regular basis on television. So, you know, people have kind of gave me this title of innovator of selfie, because I don't think anybody else has ever done that before me, and certainly on a regular basis on a weekly TV show.
So when you first started noticing people taking pictures of themselves, you know, with their cameras or their phones, did you get thinking like, huh, I remember when I used to do this back in the day?
Oh yeah, you know, I could, you know, being, you know, before, you know, I was before its time. You know what I mean? I mean, I was doing it, and you got to remember what happened was when I did it. I had a, you know, you have to go out and you have to have like a camera. Well, now the selfie that happens right now, it happens because of social media. Because everybody has a camera on their phone, you know. When a cell phone first came out, you know, it looked like a walkie-talkie, if you remember.
Yeah.
They didn't have a camera. Camera on the phone didn't come out till, you know, just few, you know, literally, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, you're about right. 10 years ago, I think the first camera phone was made, and I remember when they first started the camera phone, you know, it used to be just, you could only take still shots.
Right.
Then it evolved into where you could video. Then it evolved into where you could take pictures and video in high def, and it's, it just keeps evolving.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like I said, I'm cool with the title that I have, you know, Innovator of Selfie. I mean, it's documented. You know, I did it every week on television show. You know, every time I was on it, every pay-per-view. You know, and but it's cool. At least I'm known for something.
Hey, it's a cool title to have. It definitely
Absolutely.
Is. And I'll tell you, that was a fun story. I really enjoyed that. Now, I want to switch gears going back into WCW and, you know, when you were there, when the Monday Night Wars was going on and you were around in the height of this, was WCW, especially, you know, when the Monday Night Wars just started, that's when you guys were catching up on the WWE and you eventually took them over for 84 weeks. How was the demeanor, you know, with everybody at work at that time? Was everybody under a lot of pressure, or were you guys at WCW more laid back because you guys felt like, all right, you know, we're going to take them over. You know, we're really gaining a lot of traction here. Like, what was it like just in the back of those times?
Well, I think what happened was, to answer your question, it was pretty helter-skelter backstage. You know, they would bring 80 wrestlers into a show, and obviously, you know, everybody's on the contract, so you got to show up anyway. But then you show up and, you know, you didn't know you were going to be on the match till about, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So they were literally writing the show as, you know, it was evolving, it was changing. Shit was happening as it happened. So I would say, especially, you know, we finally beat him on a rating and now you want to keep beating him on a rating. You know, that's a lot of pressure. Obviously I was not in a booking. You know, my part was to bring in talent, you know, introduce talent, great talent from all over the world. So, as far as the people that was in programming, I think it was amazing amount of pressure for them. You know, not for talent. But, you know, they said, okay, you got to match your song, so go out and kill them, you know, which they were willing to do because that was, you know, really a time they get to shine, you know, on an 8-minute match, you know, you got millions and millions of people watching you. I mean, you know, you want to go out and put the best foot forward. And so as far as the talent goes, there's no pressure. They want to go out there and just, to do the best and show what you can do, you know, having that platform to showcase yourself. But I think in people that was in the office, it was writing and booking, I think there was a lot of pressure.
Oh, I can imagine, you know, because you guys are trying to take down the biggest wrestling juggernaut at that time, the WWF at the time, now WWE. And, you know, you guys had such an awesome product. I was always one of those, you know, flip-flopping back and forth, making sure I'd try to catch, you know, everything because I was just hooked. I was hooked. These wars just had me sucked right into them. And, you know, I just noticed when it got to, what was it, around 90, maybe starting in 98 or 99, I noticed, you know, things started slipping a little bit for you guys. And then I know they ended up bringing Russo in and things just got worse once Vince Russo got there.
Well, yeah, let me tell you a little bit about what happened. It was actually end of 2000, towards, I think it's like September, October, I think it's October. 2000, they fired Eric Bischoff. I won't go into detail of a bunch of stuff, but there was people that was in the front office didn't like what Eric was doing. And there was a guy named by Bill Bush who was actually a Dean Kellner. He kind of created a coup, got ousted Eric. That was on the end of 99. And here's a man who has no idea. I'm sure it's a great account, but, you know, as far as wrestling business, dealing with wrestling talent, you know, he has no street skills whatsoever. So you bring in, you know, somebody convinced him to bring Vince Russo in as a head writer. He just made a thing just, he made the product worse than he was. He'll probably tell you that he was messed up when he got there, but I tell you what, you know, I mean, think about all the book, some of the insane booking he did. you know, putting the belt on Buff's mom. You know, I mean, it was some crazy stuff that was going on. You know, he just got away from wrestling. And you know, he, and after that, they did bring Eric back for a brief time, but he was, company was already, on the way out. And I think, I think within that 12 months, I think that's when WCW was basically sold, and to WWE. But let me go back and tell you doing when we were competing head to head. I don't think at any point, at least in my perspective, that we were trying to take down WWF. We just wanted to be real competitive. Sure, we wanted to beat him on rating for bragging rights, but I don't think at any point anybody had any illusion or delusion you know, that we were gonna get him, take them out of business. I don't think that was any part of it.
And you know, you very well could be right. I mean, I know you guys were going back and forth for a long time, and yeah, you know, I've watched all of the Monday Night Wars, like all the documentaries and everything they put out on WWE Network. And yeah, you know, you're exactly right what you said when Vince Russo got there. Like if you were to ask him the question, he would probably say when he got there it was already a mess. And that's exactly what he did say in that documentary. And I'm with you, Sonny. You know, I put it on the shoulders of Russo because WCW was fine until they decided to fire Bischoff and bring in Russo. I mean, everything was moving fine at that point. I mean, yeah, maybe things were slipping a little bit, but nothing to the degree of when Russo walked through the doors.
And I hear the different stuff. I mean, I don't know this. I mean, I was there. And I just signed a 2-year contract and end of 99. And Russo decided to take all the Mexicans and all the Japanese off television. Without any, only thing he said was he was from America and he just wanted American on TV. And he didn't want any Japanese or Mexican on television. This is kind of a very racist statement to begin with. When you're working for a big corporate, you know, you can't use their national origin to exclude them from working. Yeah, that's how dumb he is. But anyway, you know, he'll sit there and deny that he, you know, whatever the reason, that he decided. And not only that, you know, there was a financial repercussion from that. Because at that point, I think New Japan was paying us about $1 million a year to use our talent on their show. You know, that went away right away when he did that. So, and just think, you know, I mean, if you have a company, why would you exclude a group of people that it is part of your, you know, a talent? That you need talent to fill the show, but to exclude them because, you know, just because of their national origin. Kind of silly.
Oh, that's, if you could only see my reaction, Sonny, when you said that, it blew me away. I'm like, that's an incredibly racist thing for Russo to do. I mean, it doesn't surprise me why he failed, you know, now after hearing that. I mean, and with this kind of behavior, with him just wanting Americans on TV, did any of this wash over into like backstage politics, you know, like backstage in the locker rooms or anything? Did everything just start kind of boiling over with his actions, like a divide, you know, like you had Americans?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, I was already gone, you know, I was gone at 2000. So, but their product really suffered. You know, it was just, you know, I can't think of one good thing he ever did. You know, and when they brought Eric back, try to save the company, you know, he was so far gone. And of course those two didn't get along, so, you know, it was part of struggle at that at best. You know, and that showed on their product. I mean, it's too bad. You know, but there's a lesson to be learned from that as well. But let's talk about what's going on today. You got New Japan Show, in LA, who sold out in about 2 hours. New Japan's making their way into, United States market. You know, like what I said at the beginning of the show, where there's a lot of independent show, just imagine, you know, for those wrestling fans out there, that you can go, right now, you can go, and there's a lot of different, because of technology, there's a lot of different outlets out there. I work right now, as a consultant to get a lot of different, content from all over the world, such as, Let's Way, which is a bare knuckle kickboxing from, old Burma, the country of Burma. And we just did a show, on the 16th a couple days ago. So I work for a company called Fight TV, F-I-T-E, and you can download free on your app, and you get to watch, New Japan shows, Old Japan shows. You get to watch these pro wrestling shows that normally you don't get to see, as well as the MMA show, like Chen Wumin, which is a big MMA company out of Shenzhen, China. ACB, which is the MMA company out of Russia. So those are the things that we're, you know, and along with the Ring of Honors and TNA and all those things, pay-per-view, you get to see those things on Fight TV. So if you get a chance, download Fight app, F-I-T-E-TV, and it's free. And there's some free content out there, but as well as pay-per-view that you get to watch. And what's great about, one of the greatest technologies that you can watch on your phone, push a button to any smart TV, you can broadcast what's on the phone to a smart TV, such as Google TV, Apple TV, and so on. And, so it's a great stuff. Everybody should just go out there and check it out.
I totally agree. I agree. Everybody should do that because you know what, Sonny? I do have the Fight TV app, and I gotta tell you, I do exactly, you know, what you told everybody to do. That's just what I do. You know, I find content, I'll press the button to have it go right to my TV, and I just start watching. You know, it's great stuff.
And you know, this part is it's on demand. You know, you get to watch it when you want to watch it, from wherever you want to watch it from, you know?
Yeah, you can't beat that.
No, technology is changing. How we watch television, how we entertain ourselves is changing rapidly.
And it's interesting that you brought up New Japan, you know, because I've really gotten into the New Japan product earlier this year. I started, you know, by watching Wrestle Kingdom. The first ever Wrestle Kingdom I saw, I believe, was Wrestle Kingdom 9 when they had it on American pay-per-view. And then, I watched on and off, you know, throughout the first couple of years. And then when it got to Wrestle Kingdom 11 and I seen that Okada Omega match and that was one of the greatest matches I ever saw. It made me fall in love with their product to where I've been more steady with it. And then I ended up watching Dominion, 10 days ago, the rematch with Omega Okada. Those guys are absolutely incredible. And I hope to see them in the main event at Wrestle Kingdom 12 because they're lighting the world on fire.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's one of the things. I think many American wrestling fans will be amazed. I'm pretty sure they'll be amazed at what they can see in some of the Japanese, you know, wrestling. I'm bringing, we were just talking about New Japan, but there's a company called All Japan. That'll be on Fight TV shortly. And Wrestle One, who is now the, if you guys remember a guy named by Kaz Hayashi, who was at WCW, he is now the president of Wrestle One.
Oh.
The chairman is Great Muda. So, you know their product going to be great. So there's a lot of good stuff coming that the new wrestling fan can see. And I truly believe, and I don't mean to be too discouraging to any company that is out here now, but competition is good for business. You know, Burger King is great for McDonald's. You know?
Yeah.
Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, and all those fast food choice you have is good for business. You know, whether I have $10 to spend for lunch, you know, having choice, it's good for the consumer, and that's making the people who's offering product have to put up a better product so they can compete. And when New Japan, Old Japan, those guys start coming into our platform like Fight TV and maybe even on some of the cable networks, that's great for wrestling fans. And end of the day, it's great for business.
Yeah. It is. It really is, because you know what? If you just have one company out there and no competition to challenge said company, you know, it's going to get boring. You need that variety. You need that challenge. You need that competitive spirit.
Just imagine this. Way back in the days when they were building cars, when Henry Ford built himself the Model T, if there was no other company except Ford Motor Company, do you think there's no reason for them to innovate, to make things better, faster, safer? And competition makes you do that. And that same thing with any product that you get out there, whether it's wrestling, even a football, you know, they have to constantly tweak the rules, change the viewer, how they can watch the shows, pre-shows, post-shows. They have to make it better for the audience. And those things, because, you know, they compete on big sports. They compete with baseball and basketball. So they have to make themselves unique. And end of the day, that's all good for consumer.
Oh, definitely. You're 100% right about that. It's all good for consumer. And I'll tell you something. You sure walked us through, you know, some fantastic things. And, you know, you're working for Fight Network. That is awesome. So, you know, you're still kind of around the wrestling business. And one thing I was curious, like there's a couple of couple more things I wanted to ask you, you know, just a couple of fun things here. First off, out of all, you know, you've gotten to be a great manager in the professional wrestling business. And what I wanted to know from you, you know, you got to manage a lot of great people, but if there was any wrestler out there, it could be, any wrestler that, you know, has passed away that's no longer with us, any wrestler that's around today in the company, you know, any one single wrestler, if you had to choose that you did not get to manage that you really wanted to, who would you choose and why?
Well, I think any manager will tell you that, you know, people who's bigger than life, you know, Andre the Giant will be probably any manager's, you know, top of the list, I would believe. Just because, you know, he, you talk about something, somebody who is really bigger than life. It's probably Andre the Giant, you know, far as people that in the history of wrestling. But I will tell you, currently, on a current product, I think I could help it with a few of the Japanese wrestlers that is on WWE right now. You got a guy Nakamura, who's amazing talent, entertaining, but, you know, because he doesn't speak English, and even when he does, it's such a broken English, and I'm not faulting him for that because it's very difficult. He's a Japanese guy who lived in Japan, you know, speaking English as a second language. It's very difficult to communicate. You know what I mean? You don't want people to be going, what did he say? You know?
Yeah.
Here's a guy who can use the manager. And not necessarily me, but, you know, someone like me. I think it would really help him. Now, that's what manager's job anyway, you know? To be a mouthpiece for some of the talents. And you got a great female talent over there. Probably one of the greatest female talents that, you know, as far as the worker is concerned, is Asuka, at WWE. And, you know, they can only go so far because their product consists of action, which is in-ring performance, as well as storytelling. So they lack the storytelling part because they can't communicate clearly. You know, it's hard to make the story work. So I would love to be able to help them. You know, it's not for nothing. But you know, like I said, you know, someone like me, they could use help.
And you know what, I totally agree, and because they really do need the mouthpieces, they really do, but as far as the wrestling goes, they're about as good as you can get. I mean, hey, maybe there's a chance out there, Sonny, that you might get that call one day. Maybe someone from there is going to listen to this interview, and they'll be like, you know what, we're going to take Sonny up on this, let's get him in here.
about 15 years ago, there was a guy named by Kenzo that was at WWE, and I did talk to them a little bit about possibilities. They did call me and ask me. The timing wasn't right for me. I mean, my kids were all, you know, they're all grown up now. So, but I was enjoying being a father and being able to go to their soccer game and their wrestling matches and stuff. And I was having a great time here, enjoying my life as a father. So, timing wasn't right. But, I mean, you know, like I said, I hate to see such a great talent like Nakamura and Asuka not being able to take it to their pinnacle, you know, success at that venue. You know, because the rule, they're handicapped because they can't communicate, you know, and be able to tell to fit into the storyline.
Oh yeah. And you know what's something here is that I remember Kenzo Suzuki back in the day.
Yeah.
I do remember him, and yeah, he could have definitely, you know, benefited from someone like you for sure. But yeah, you know, if timing's not right, it's not right. You know, you gotta do what you gotta do, and it's totally understandable. And you know, for you being a wrestling manager, I have another question for you here. You being a wrestling manager, when you look back on, you know, many other people that have done the same job that you have done, do you have any favorite wrestling managers, you know, in the business that you really enjoyed, that did the same job as you did?
Well, you know what? I mean, I will tell you the when I literally, you know, broke into business, because I was, you know, all of a sudden I was a manager. I think it was in pay-per-view in 95, I believe it was, when we did a World War III, you know, when it was Japan, New Japan versus WCW. My team had a Masa Saito, Kintsuki Sasaki, Kanemoto, Jushin Thunder Liger, and, you know, the great New Japan talent, going against Sting, Luger, and so on. But what was amazing thing about that period is that most kind, people that helped me develop my character, you know, the Bobby the Brain Heenan, Gene Norton, these guys got amazing amount of wrestling knowledge, and you know, Jimmy Hart was, even to this day I talk to Jimmy, great help, you know, give me a little tweak here and tweak there, with my character and you know, what you should do and what you shouldn't do during a match. You know, everything from, you know, pointing where the hard camera was. You know, those are the guys who I owe amazing amount of gratitude. And you know, they were very kind and very nice to a green Japanese kid who was out there managing all the wrestlers.
And, you know, yeah, all, like I had the chance to meet, you know, Bobby the Brain Heenan and, Jimmy Hart in person. And those are a couple of real stand-up guys. You know, they really are. They're really nice to their fans. Even Mean Gene, you know, Mean Gene, I got to meet him too. Another great guy. And yeah, those are some of the best, some of the all-time greats right there. And we're getting near the end, Sonny. I'm down to my last two questions. I don't mean to keep you, but I'm down to my last two. We talked about what it was like doing business with Eric Bischoff. And just curious, you know, even though you didn't really work with these guys, I'm curious to get your point of view, what you think about them. How do you feel, like, you've done business with Eric, and how do you feel about the way that men like Paul Heyman did business and men like Vince McMahon did business? What do you think of the way they do business, you know, compared to Eric?
Well, I can only tell you that, I mean, that's you know, I worked with Paul, Paul and I had a discussion. We had a couple of dinners way back, right after I left WCW, by doing stuff together and with his program at ECW. You know, Paul is an amazing intelligent person. You know, my dealing with Paul, we never really did business together, but, you know, he's just a very, very smart guy. He's a great manager on camera. But he's probably, he knows more about business, probably off camera. So, you know, I have nothing but great thing to say about, you know, my experience with Paul Heyman. Now, unfortunately, with, you know, with Vince McMahon, obviously he is the pinnacle, in professional wrestling. He rules, you know, that universe and certainly in North America, if it's not worldwide. So, you know, I have nothing but respect for him, you know, but I never worked for him, so I can't really compare that. You know what I mean?
I got you. Yep. And I'll tell you, you know, Sonny, we're down to the last question before we conclude this interview. And I'm excited to ask this because I'm excited to get your input. you know, as we know, WCW was bought out by WWE. So, where I'm going with this is, if you were, because there's been many managers to step into the hallowed halls of the WWE Hall of Fame, and I'm just curious, you know, if you were to get that call from, say, a WWE higher up, or, you know, maybe Triple H or Vince McMahon himself, and they were to tell you that we're going to put you in this year's class, you know, considering everything that you've done and the decorated career that you've had as a manager, what would it mean to you to take your rightful place inside the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, I mean, look, just like anything else, I mean, I was recently, because my, you know, before I was involved in professional wrestling, and I'm still am involved in martial arts, I was awarded A3 Black Belt a year ago. And, you know, it's an honor to be recognized for your achievement or your involvement into organization, whether it's in martial arts or in professional wrestling. But honestly, you know, I'd be flattered, but I think there's a lot more people out there deserve, so in my mind anyway, to be in the Hall of Fame. I did play a little part in the history of wrestling, doing it one of the best time in wrestling, I think in history of wrestling. I think, you know, 95 to 2000 was best time for all that is involved in professional wrestling. And I am just happy to say that I was there during that time. To get back to your question, yeah, of course I'd be flattered and I'd be honored. But, you know, it's not something that I don't foresee that has happened, or happening. You know, it's just like anything else, you're honored by somebody recognizing you for, you know, your contribution to any program that is out there. And I think, you know, as I move forward, you know, I get to stay involved with international wrestling, international martial arts, international MMA, and kickboxing. You know, with the Fight TV, I get to do all of that. So I am absolutely having a good time. I just spent 2 weeks in Japan, acquiring some content, and we're trying to do some stuff with Dragon Mania, from what Asai has in Mexico. So there, you know, there's a lot of opportunities. I'm in discussion with MMA company in Russia. So, you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening, and I'm just happy that and fortunate to be able to be involved in. Look, man, I make a living doing what I like to do. You know, it's like getting paid for eating. You know, and I enjoy every minute of it. So I'm a very blessed person with a wonderful family who supports me. You know, I'm the luckiest man in the world.
And you know what, Sonny? I think you said it best. You know, to do what you have done, and you're here at this point in your life, you're at a great place in your life, and you know, you're still doing what you love and you're enjoying it. Honestly, you could not ask for anything better than that. You really couldn't.
No, I mean, that's how I feel. I mean, honestly. I was just talking to, you know, I was talking to Eric Bischoff not that long ago and did one of these podcasts. And all the things we got to do. I mean, because of martial arts, I went to South Africa and met at that point, he was the sports minister and later became President de Klerk, who eliminated apartheid. I met him in 1986. And in 1996, I got to go to North Korea with Antonio Inoki and Muhammad Ali and got to see things that not very American ever get to see. So thing I got to do because of my involvement in my martial arts or in professional wrestling, you know, I got to do things that people don't get to see. Normal people don't get to see. So I am blessed and I'm happy and listen, thank you so much for having me on your show. And let me know if you want my 2 cents sometime and I'd be glad to come back to your show.
Oh, Sonny, that sounds great. I would appreciate it. And, you know, if you have anything that you'd like to promote, like upcoming, I don't know if you have any upcoming signings or shows for the wrestling fans or anything with social media or like a website. If you'd like to promote it, you know, feel free. The show is yours.
Yeah, like, you know, I'm in a Facebook, I'm the Sonny Ono. So, you know, you're welcome to, check out my page. You know, I'm usually letting people know whether it's in martial arts or, doing something for Fight TV or, Lucha Pride Pro Wrestling out of Texas or, Hood Slam in Oakland. You know, you can find out where I'm at and what's going on and follow me on the Facebook and hopefully, I'll be seeing you soon.
Awesome. That sounds great. And Sonny, I would like to say thank you and I appreciate your time and I'm sure the fans, they feel the same way and you definitely had a decorated career and you're living a great life and it's always great to have a feel good story like this on the show and I really appreciate you being here and now right before I sign off to the live audience, can you hold on for just 1 minute and then I'll be back with you on the line after I sign off with the live audience here?
Okay, good enough.
All right, I'll be right back on with you in 1 minute, Sonny. And to all of you, the live audience, thank you very much for listening and tuning in tonight to episode number 67 of the Beyond the Regal Big T Wrestling Podcast with Mr. Sonny Ono, WCW legend. And can't thank him enough for being here, and I hope to get Sonny back on the show sometime soon. This is just an incredible honor tonight, and I hope to have Sonny back soon. And all of you, I hope to see you very soon. I'll be back next week with episode number 68 of the Beyond the Ring of Big T Wrestling Podcast. With another thank you to Mr. Sonny Ono for being here tonight. And to all of you, thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. You all take care. I love you all, and good night, everybody.